to Friday Breakfast with Phil and Kirsty, part of the Future Positive podcast powered by Capitalize. In this bite-sized weekly episode of the Future Positive podcast, we will take you through the key stories of the week that are impacting small businesses and their trusted advisors. I'm your host, Phil Obden, Head of Customer Education and Engagement at Capitalize. And as always, I'm joined by Kirsty McGregor, founder of the Corporate Finance Network and Capitalize's very own accountant in residence. It's a bit windy.
Yeah, so we record this on Thursday evening, and in the north we had Storm Dudley already last night, and he definitely made his presence felt. And with 74 mile an hour winds near me, but yeah, I think tomorrow morning when everybody hopefully is watching, listening to this whilst eating their breakfast on Friday morning, we will be in the clutches of Eunice, won't we? So that's going to affect the whole country, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy times. And, you know, I've even had to, I've got a day off that was meant to be booked for tomorrow as we record this. And I'm probably still going to take the day off, but it's what we were going to do. I think, you know, going out and flying birds of prey is probably not the best thing for that.
Cinema. Look, I do cinema.
Yeah, I think that might be a safer way to go. Before we get started this week and we jump into our stories, I just want to give a nod to the Zero Award nominees for the UK and South Africa, which were announced yesterday. And it was great to see so many Capitalize partners nominated for awards, both in the UK and in South Africa. Of course, the winners will be announced on the 27th of April 2022 in a big London-based award show. And I'll add a list of the nominees to the show notes because it's always good to keep on top of those firms that are nominated and that kind of out there doing great stuff. And yeah, so I just wanted to kind of touch on that. We're coming into that season, right? Award season. Shortly after that, we've got the Yorkshire Accountancy Awards. Then shortly after that, we've got the Accounting Excellence Awards and the British Accountancy Awards. So we're definitely in that period where trophy cabinets get a bit more full than they do. And they're all going to be in real life, Kirsty.
Hey, at last. Yeah, it's good. It's good. All these firms that we want the whole profession to aspire to be like and take ideas from. And it's a really positive thing. I love it.
Yeah, and like, you know, that's exactly that, right? It's a great way to, we're the Future Positive podcast, and it's a great way to kind of look at things and say, look, these are people that are doing things that are making them stand out. And that's always a great way to start a conversation. So look, that aside, what is our first story of the week?
Well, talking about conversations, we've already talked about it. The British always talk about the weather. And no wonder, really, considering the range of weather that we get. But I just wanted to touch on this article I've seen. It was actually BBC Breakfast videoed the Energy Networks Association that look after all the power networks. And what I really was quite impressed with this time is that they have been very vocal in both the power companies and also the rail companies in their planning for these storms, which have been trailed for a couple of weeks, haven't they? And we knew they were coming. So really, there were no excuses. But what I saw this time that I haven't, don't recall seeing in previous storms that are forecast, is that they've really been very vocal because, of course, there were so many houses and businesses without power in the storms over the end of last year. And thankfully, it sounds like that there have been some overnight with Storm Dudley that we've had in the north, but it sounds like most of them are back now. They have got power again. I just like the fact that they have got these crisis plans and they are rolling them out in advance of these storms occurring. And it led me to think about, you know, floods that I've unfortunately experienced in our local area, and I know some, you know, other areas, especially Cumbria, experience floods quite a lot. And it's something that I talk about regularly with firms, that are there SMEs planning for potential crisis, whether that is a flood or a loss of power, or whether it's a loss of a key supplier or a loss of a member of staff due to long-term sickness. I mean, we've had so much of that, obviously, with COVID, but do they have plans in place? Because this is definitely something as advisors we can help them with. And it also often brings down their insurance policy premiums as well, because if they can show that they have got some crisis management in place and alternative solutions, if certain things happen, then that can really appease the insurance companies, and they feel comfortable about that. So that's the first article. It's the Energy Networks Association rolling out their resilience plans, which is great to hear. And also the rail networks have already stopped trains and things already.
Yeah. And
Eunice.
To your point around contingency insurance, I used to, part of one of the product ranges I used to be involved with when I was in asset finance, we used to do business continuity cover, both for individual and both for the business itself. And you know, it's amazing how many people phone up and ask about business continuity insurance after something's gone wrong and it's kind of too late, right? Those are the kind of things that they're belt and braces stuff that if you work in certain industries, it's just.
Well, you say that, but you know, that sector got a terrible rap after COVID.
Oh, it did.
Because there was the court cases, because they just weren't paying out. And this is always my worry. But that, aside from the insurance element, for businesses to actually think about their own resilience planning, their own crisis management, then it's no bad thing to have things like that in place and to consider as many different possibilities of, you know, it's quite a depressing exercise to go through at first.
Oh, look, it's like
you have to think about everything that might go wrong.
Yeah, it's like when you're doing Keyman cover for directors of businesses, right? Yeah. You're effectively putting a policy in place that will only ever get used if the guy that's in charge of the business or the team in charge of the business dies or something horrible happens to them. And you're going to go, like, having those conversations were always some of the hardest conversations to have. It's like, have you thought about what would happen to your business in the event of? And it's like, So, well, look, that didn't end on a positive note. I was talking about.
Let's roll on. Right, article number two is from City AM. And they are, and other stories at other publications as well covered this, but the UK automotive industry, the SMMT, Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, who I know because I used to work with for a project a while ago, which was quite interesting. They are requesting that the government form a new regulator for the installation and charging of the electric vehicle charging points, because they are concerned that different suppliers coming into the market have got different standards around safety and installation and costs and charges. And they think that there should be some sort of minimum standards for all this infrastructure that we know is necessary for the rollout of all of these charging points. Because what they're finding is the standard chargers are being rolled out very quickly, but the ultra rapid chargers, which are the ones that I would certainly want to use, because I lack patience.
You don't also have 4 hours to sit at a service station.
I am going from one part of the country to another. Yeah, the rollout of those is lagging behind. And so there needs to be some sort of joined up thinking, which of course is obvious when you think about this. But has it happened yet? No, it hasn't. Because we've got the government, we've got local authorities, we've got suppliers, we've got the users, and we've got the electricity companies all involved in having to come up with this. They are stakeholders in this new rollout. And it also, I'll also link to an article in the show notes about the development there's been in batteries. Now, this is something I'm very aware of at the moment, because I am in the position where I need to consider changing my car, because it comes to the end of a contract hire agreement in September. So I am like, what do we do? Do we go electric now? Do we not go electric yet? Are we going to have a car for a couple of years and then go electric? And I know I will have range anxiety. I know I will. So I'm watching what's going on with the rollout of this infrastructure of batteries quite carefully. So there has been some developments in technology around batteries, and lithium sulfur batteries have been found to be 3 times more efficient and extend the range than the more traditional lithium ion batteries that they've been using so far for both electric vehicles and also for your phones, your smartphones. And it just reminded me that something I'd heard a few times by international, well-known spokespeople in business and in royalty and in politics, this UN sustainable goals that have been set by the United Nations, where we're, you know, we've got standards, we want to set targets to the whole world to have clean water and sustainable communities and quality education, equality, diversity, climate action, clean seas, and all these things are great for governments and bodies like the UN to set these targets. But it is going to be private businesses which make a success or not of these very important aims. And you can see that now, that it's private companies are rolling this new innovation out, and they're the ones that are trying to solve the problems. And I just think that's really, really positive thing to read about. We've got the regulator being requested by an industry. And how often do you hear that? You know, normally it's imposed on them, but they are actually being positive enough to say, look, we think we're going to need this. It will be easier.
And let's be honest, right? It's taken years and years and years and years and years to get, like, they're now finally talking about having a standard charger on mobiles, right? So every mobile phone will have the same charger, and probably USB-C, because that's what's accepted. But it's taken how many years to get to this point? And even now Apple still push back on it.
Well, it's part of their income stream, isn't it? Bring a new charger out.
Yeah, accessories are a huge part of their income stream. So it's kind of, you know, to see that they're looking to standardize it early doors for electric cars. I still have reservations. I still think that fundamentally what we're trying to do with electric cars won't happen or can't happen, just because the infrastructure just, I mean, I just look at my street. I have 3 lampposts on my entire street servicing probably 40 cars.
It's going to be Bluetooth. It'll get there.
I hope so. Or, like, I always thought that maybe if you put the charging strips in the yellow lines on the road or so, or the parking lines outside the road, that might be a way to go.
Yeah, but, the grid.
What do I know, right? What do I know?
Come on, Phil. What's happened today? You've had your Weetabix this morning.
But I love the idea of, like, better battery technology, right? Because... Yeah. I think, but if you look at batteries, we're still using Duracell batteries. Other brands are available. But how long has that technology been around for? Like, forever.
Well, people think if it's not broken, don't fix it. So, but this is something that needs to be fixed. So,
yeah.
Anyway, story number three. People will finish their breakfast, and we'll still be talking. Business Leader magazine it's an article actually that was last week, and I just missed it. And James Ashford of GoProposal had put it on his social media with a link. Not surprising, because GoProposal are featured in this list, which is the top 32 companies, strange number I thought, however, 32 companies to watch in 2022.
32?
I don't know why they got
22 for 22 or 30 or 50. Like, 32 is the most random number.
I know, they obviously ran out of ideas after that. But it's a great article to read, actually, because it just shows you the sectors that are up and coming. And not only will these massive companies be included, but also there'll be lots of smaller companies doing similar things. So if you're looking for startups, if you're looking to work with innovative and growing sectors, then have a scan down this list and just look at them. But there's all sorts, including vets practices that are online vets, various businesses as well associated with owning pets. Obviously, electric vehicles is in there. Payment solutions, which we've spoken about a few times, is in there. Distribution and logistics companies, fashion companies and development of fashion. Online dating, another growing area as we're in Valentine's week still. And commercial cleaning. So the list goes on and on in these 32 companies. And then it also links up with another article I read about the startup capital of the UK in 2021. And Enterprise Nation covered this, as well as a couple of other publications. And, well, listen, where do you think is the most entrepreneurial town in the UK where there have been the most number of startups per head of population? Where would you say it was, Phil?
Oh, that's a tough question. But I would think it won't be London. So it's going to be a large city that's quite innovation focused. So I'm thinking somewhere like a Manchester or a Bristol. And the reason I give that, right, Bristol's quite a young kind of innovative type place. And Manchester's been at the forefront. And not many people know, but Manchester's been at the forefront of tech outside of London for many a year.
You don't have to tell me that. When the first computer was built, imagine. Anyway, no, you're wrong. The highest startups per 100 of population, 16.2 startups per 100 people were founded in 2021, was in a town that I know quite well called Llandudno, or if you're Welsh, Llandudno, in North Wales. It's about probably a good hour's drive from Manchester. So Llandudno was top of the list, which is just fantastic for them. Also, there are towns on there that you would expect in the southeast, like Redhill in Surrey, Tunbridge Wells in Kent, Truro in Cornwall. So, I mean, Cornwall is really up and coming as well for the development of new technologies and startups. Motherwell, North Lanarkshire, up in Scotland. Guildford in Surrey, kind of would have expected that. Walsall in the West Midlands, brilliant for them. Chester, in Cheshire, great university there. Canterbury in Kent, Chelmsford in Essex, Dudley in the West Midlands. Dudley, gosh, we've been all about Dudley this week, haven't we? Dorchester in Dorset, Stockport in Cheshire in South Manchester, Hemel Hempstead, Doncaster, good old Donny in South Yorkshire, home of James Ashford, and Hereford, Peterborough, Stevenage and Falkirk are in all in the top 19 there, that have all got the most new starts in 2021 per 100 of population.
Is it national not give a full rounded number week in statistics? 32 on one, 19 on the other.
I'm sorry.
My OCD can't cope with this.
That's really
interesting. So they're my stories, quite a lot there.
Yeah, I like that. Wow, who would have thought, eh? Well, look, I've got a question for you. What do you think, and this is my story for the week, slightly changed from the one we were discussing earlier, because I'm bored of talking about the metaverse. I've decided I'm banning the metaverse on this podcast.
We're going to talk about Disney, though.
We were, yeah. Disney and the metaverse. It's interesting, right? Disney are investing in the metaverse. It's great. It shows that this is going to be the next big thing that people are going to try and do. But there was a concert this week in the metaverse and it was a disaster. So, hey, yeah, these things happen. But more interestingly, what do you think makes people attend an event?
Oh, I saw this on your LinkedIn and I voted. Yeah. So, I voted for a great speaker.
You voted for a great speaker. Well, you and 66%.
There you go. Yep.
So a good speaker followed by great food and drink, followed by a great location, followed by something else. And one of the most interesting comments I had, and I'd never thought about this, and this came from a woman working in, she markets herself as Marketing Wonder Woman, which I think is great. And it's from, and she said, and this is a point I've never considered, secured parking is really important as well. I tend not to go to events if the parking situation is poor. How many people, when they're organizing an event, have thought about the safety of the coming and going and the parking side of things?
Is she a northerner? A northerner?
Don't know.
I bet she is. Because when you organise an event in London, never thinks about the parking. They think about the tube station, don't they? But absolutely, in the regions, you've got to think about things like this. But no, the reason I went for speaker, and I think probably the reason most people would, is that it's got to be something that's worth being there in person for.
Yeah.
That will be just inspirational and stay with you for a long time, because you can read it from these speakers, but actually hearing from them, yeah, watching them, meeting them, it stays with you. That information stays with you and inspires you with your work going forward. So I think, yeah, absolutely, great speakers. Don't have to be expensive speakers. They don't have to be celebrities, but those that have got something really brilliant to say.
Someone that's going to engage you, engage the people, and make you want to be there. Yeah, I'm cheaper than that. I'll just take good food and drink, right? So I'm all about the, like, we are at Capitalized hosting some events in March, just some small kind of breakfast events, and the first one is at Duck and Waffle, and I've never been, and everyone keeps telling me it's amazing. So I'm like, I'm all in. I'm there because, you know, I have to.
Well,
be.
An unusual venue, I would go with that, an unusual venue, but I think, you know, look, if I'm going to eat and drink, I want to do that with my friends and my family and nice, you know, I mean, as much as I love people I work with and the professional contacts I have, you know, if I'm going to be in a really luxury venue, I would like to share that with people.
And on that note, though, we have a great venue booked for a Capitalize event, which we've just started promoting. We don't normally promote stuff here for Capitalize, but we are bringing the party to Accountex this year. And we have hired the Sunborn Yacht. Formerly a very famous location for Nelson and a former company he worked with. But we are taking that yacht and we're going to make it the Capitalized official party for Accountex this year. So I think that is phenomenal.
Will my name be down? That's a question.
Say again?
Will my name be on the list? That's the question.
Ooh, I don't even think mine will be at this rate. So look, for those new to Capitalize, our vision is to give small businesses and their advisors transparency and control over business finance. We want every small business to be able to identify risks they may face, explore how they stand from a credit perspective, and choose the right funding that best fits their business. You can find out more about Capitalize at capitalize.com. For those of you that have been with us for a while here on the podcast, next Tuesday, we have the next in our interview podcasts. And this time we'll be talking to Dan Cockerton from the Digital Accountancy Show. where we discuss supporting accountants' journey through live and digital events. And Dan was the pioneer. He was the canary in the coal mine last year for live events. The Digital Accountancy Show was the first one out the door after the pandemic, and it was a fantastic event, and they're back this year. But Dan's done a lot to support accountants and vendors in this space over the past year. So that was a really interesting, really fascinating interview we had with Dan.
Yep.
And of course, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it from to make sure you get future episodes as they arrive hot off the press. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Tuesday so you can listen to our interview with Dan, and we'll be back on Friday for more key stories from across the week. Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.